put him in the Heisman.
Got that award right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's going to bring back a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
So John Rothstein tweeted out that Jalen Harris is receiving interest from the following programs: Wake Forest, Missouri, East Carolina, Cincinnati, Temple, Seton Hall, Georgetown, Hofstra, and Louisiana Lafayette. We always say on this program, you're only as good as your next job. So I'm very curious to see where Jalen Harris ends up. Those are a lot of those schools are Power Five. Some are outside the Power Five that we listed. So it's really going to be interesting to see how he does. And I hope, no ill will towards Jalen Harris. I hope he kills it. I hope he averages like 15 and 10 wherever he goes next. And I'm curious to see where he ends up, Tommy.
Missouri would be intriguing because obviously they're on your schedule and they're an SEC school. He's from Wilson, North Carolina, but he went from there to what, New Mexico?
Correct.
Or New Mexico State. Well, so that, you know, he's, I guess, willing, has the mindset to play away from home. But most of these schools, with the exception of Louisiana Lafayette and Missouri, are pretty much East Coast schools. Wake Forest, East Carolina. Cincinnati's not really East Coast, but Temple, Seton Hall, Georgetown. So, you know, I would imagine he's going to end up in somewhere in that part of the country. At least if that's the list of schools showing interest right now, the odds are he'll end up somewhere out east.
And I'm curious,
which would be closer to home.
Yeah. And I've always wondered, like, college basketball. And I've told you, like, I really didn't want to live anywhere outside the South when I graduated school. I told myself I didn't want to live in Arkansas after being here for 22 years. So I want to see what else is out there. I really enjoyed time in Nashville, but some guys, college basketball wise, college football, college baseball, they don't really care if it's close to home or not. They just want to see where they're going to play.
Yeah, and so I think Jalen Harris will play. I think it'll be a Division I school, and I think it'll probably be somewhere in the vicinity of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
somewhere in that, you know, state or two away or whatever. Georgetown would be interesting. I guess, would you say, I mean, on that list, Georgetown, hey, as far as history, is probably as good a basketball school as there is on that list.
Well, as far as history, but it's funny you bring that up, Tommy.
Who's the best one right now, though?
Best one right now on the list? Probably Seton Hall. And I'm forgetting the coach's name, but Miles Powell, I don't know if he didn't win player of the year, but he had a player of the year type of year in college basketball. It was absolutely incredible. I know Arkansas beat them a couple tournaments back in 2017, but they've had some good players. I think Kevin Willard is the head coach there, and they've had some good players come through there the last couple of years. So I wouldn't be, if I was him, I would definitely give a hard look to Seton Hall. But you bring up Georgetown being a prestigious program, Tommy. Matt Jones, Kentucky Sports Radio, made a good point a couple years ago on Bo's show, talking about there are no two programs in college basketball that have fallen down quicker in Arkansas and Georgetown. I know that's painful to hear, but he's exactly right, considering where both of them were under John Thompson and Nolan Richardson and to where they are in their current state.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me, because we were watching those classic NCAA tournament games last weekend, and one of them involved Georgetown in a national championship game. So it's from the 80s, but yeah, you're right. And but what's the difference? Hall of Fame coaches, right?
Correct.
John Thompson, Nolan Richardson. You want to know how you take a program from one level down a few notches? Don't replace a Hall of Fame coach with someone even in the same breath. And it's hard to do. But, you know, that's been the difference for those two programs, no question.
And you could have with Bill Self, Tommy. John White hadn't gotten in the way with that. And
hindsight's 20/20.
Yeah. I'm wondering what the basketball program would look like if Bill Self was at the helm these last 15 or so years.
You know, this is only a question that Jalen Harris or someone in his situation could answer. But we constantly think, well, where's the best playing time? Where's the best situation? The coach. And I'm not saying it's obviously not one of the top priorities, but he's going for a master's degree too, right? So if you're a graduate, you're going to be in graduate school. Where might he want to go for that might have a better program? I don't know that he has interest in law, but maybe he does. Where's one of the best law schools in the country?
Georgetown.
So, I mean, you also, I imagine these guys that find themselves in this situation as a graduate transfer, hey, I'm going to have to go to class anyway. I might as well get the master's degree that fits A with my understudy, my degree already got. And what do I want to do the rest of my life after basketball? Well, some of these schools may fit better into that plan than others. We're quick to dismiss it because we think it's all about playing time, but sometimes it's about where you can get the master's degree. I'm going to tell you, if you have an interest in law, a law degree from Georgetown is pretty prestigious.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt at all. But what's crazy, you mentioned the 82 game between Jordan, North Carolina, Dean Smith versus John Thompson's Georgetown Hoyas. Michael Jordan and company had to also beat Hakeem Olajuwon in the Final Four. It's actually the anniversary of that game as well. So you think about just the talent. And again, I am such an old school basketball guy when it comes. I like college basketball today. Not as big a fan of the NBA, but just imagine. I don't know if Drexler was on that 82 team or not. I don't remember if it was. I know Hakeem Olajuwon was, but I don't remember if Drexler was on that team as well. But just to see a type of matchup of that magnitude where you have Georgetown and John Thompson, who is as visible as a coach as it gets in that time, versus Dean Smith in North Carolina and the fabulous freshman Michael Jordan. I mean, that game must have been, I've watched it, I've watched the end of it when Jordan hits that little 16, 18-footer from the kind of the baseline area. But I just don't know if we're ever going to have that type of atmosphere and anticipation for games of college basketball moving forward, because I don't know if there's the same level of players and draw to it as there were back in the day.
Because players weren't one and done. We would have never had the college connection with today's rules, where all those greats you just mentioned, starting with Michael Jordan, Hakeem Olajuwon, just keep Patrick Ewing. Can you imagine those classic games we watched last weekend? They wouldn't even be on the list. They wouldn't be some of the greatest moments ever in NCAA tournament history, because in today's time, because all those players would have been moved on for the most part.
Yeah.
Now, Patrick Ewing was a freshman in that game, but all those are, everyone we listed, NBA Hall of Famer. You know, but you didn't go to college and only stay, you know, a year back then. So,
Brandon texts in from Paris. Jalen Harris was always a square peg in a round hole here. He needs to be in a slow down tempo system that will help keep his play slower and more in control. Jalen was second on the team in turnovers this year, behind Mason Jones, but I think Musk brought it up several times that the team plays with a pace to his liking when Jalen's on the floor. But I think it was Tom that mentioned this yesterday. Jalen had two crucial turnovers this season. Think about the Auburn one where he tried the spin cycle, or maybe it was Mississippi State where he tried the spin cycle and ended up throwing it away, and that cost him. That was a big part and a big key to it costing Arkansas either the win. It went over Mississippi State or Auburn.
Yeah, it was Mississippi State.
Mississippi State, yeah. And then he had, I know when he had a good play, obviously against Auburn with the spin cycle move and the dunk, but I think he had a crucial turnover in that game as well. So there were some good times, as we mentioned, but then there was also some times that he was a little erratic and out of control. Kind of remind me of Gary Irvin at times, Tommy, except Gary Irvin would make a decision in midair. He wouldn't know what he was going to do until he was like at the peak of what he had to do. Jalen just sometimes kind of got out of control or made an errant pass and ended up costing Arkansas a turnover or possession.
And let's just be honest, Jalen Harris probably wouldn't be leaving if he wasn't a graduate transfer where he could play immediately. And that's why when you look at other guys like a Reggie Chaney, how many of these other players, and there's going to probably be one or maybe more that leave, but are they willing to leave on their own and sit a year? You know, Jalen Harris has that golden ticket, that graduate label that allows him to go and not sit. So that's, you know, that's critical. That ought to be a lesson learned to a lot of these young players that, hey, it's why you got to take your classwork serious, because it gives you options later on in your career. And Jalen Harris has an option right now to go elsewhere and play immediately because of getting the work done. So I just don't know. No one else fits that description on this team right now, I don't believe. So I don't know. You know, it'd be interesting to see how the rest of this roster shakes out.
And on that note, I thought John Rothstein also had another interesting post yesterday. An interesting stat, a year ago, 14 mid-major players who averaged double figures during the 2018-2019 season opted to grad transfer to power conferences. Not a single one of them averaged double figures this past season. So, Tommy, sometimes it pays to stay where you're at, regardless if it's not the same allure, if it's not the same type of prestigious program that you're trying to transfer to. Sometimes it's just it's better off for your future if you have aspirations to go to the next level that you stay where you're at.
But sometimes not. I mean, you look at Jimmy Witt. Here, left, coach changed. He had the graduate transfer capability, came back. So, I mean, do you think Jimmy Witt would still have been in Arkansas and he had been as good a player as he was this year if he had just stayed and been a held over player from the Mike Anderson era? I don't know. I guess you can argue it either way. But sometimes leaving and then, you know, the rare chance to go back to a situation, but sometimes leaving is your best chance to get better.
Mm-hmm. It just depends on the situation. And you could argue since Jimmy Witt was averaging more points he averaged 1.7 more points at Arkansas that he made the right decision to come back to the University of Arkansas. Yeah. It varies case by case, but I thought that was a telling stat for Rothstein. And it just, again, like I think of an example, Nate Sestina, who came over to Kentucky from Bucknell, he really under-delivered for many Wildcats fans who thought he was going to be a lot better this season. You can look at Gentile Silla, who had a pretty good standout career at UNC Williamson, and I can't remember his previous stop, but he didn't have a great season. I think sometimes, like some guys are ready for the Power 5 level. They are just, they're built, they're good enough, like they can play in that. But some guys have success at the lower level because they're not ready to have that same type of success at the Power 5 level. But again, it's a case-by-case basis when it comes to these guys.
You know, but just because Jimmy Witt averaged nearly 2 points more per game doesn't mean it was the right for him, probably playing back in that environment, having 10, 15, sometimes 19,000 there to watch your games, to be on TV every night so all of your family can watch you. You know, those are the things that made his final year special, and I'm sure that's what Jalen Harris is looking for, is to play in a place that makes that final memory of playing special.
And I always wonder, because you brought up, Tommy, the idea of, hey, which school has a graduate program that I'm going to try it and do? Which one is going to be the best for my success in that area? Mm-hmm. When you have guys like Jalen Harris, he's not going to the NBA, but I don't know if he can be like a Jabril Durham where he can find an overseas contract or something like that. I don't know what he's trying to do with his basketball career in the future, but it's always curious and it's always interesting to see with guys that aren't NBA level talent to what specifically is drawing them to a certain school. Is it this graduate program? Is it the fact that they want to be closer to home? Is it the idea of, I think I'm going to get a better here and maybe make that jump where I could play in the G League or maybe get a better contract overseas or whatever. When it comes, again, it varies each different player. It's an individual type of aspect you're looking at. But I think it's something with Jalen's case that I'd be curious to see why he specifically decided to transfer. Is it because he didn't think he was going to get enough playing time with this incoming class next season? Is it because that he just wants something new? He wants a change of pace? I don't know. We don't know because we haven't asked him, and he hasn't really shared that publicly, his reasoning behind that. But it's something that I think would be fun to find out.
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody. It's like we were talking earlier, comparing great movies to seasons or whatever, and Arkansas and regular season championships, and hadn't had one since '94. Everybody wants to have a great ending, though, to their career. You know, we talk about all the great movies have a great ending. You know, end with nobody wants to end their college career without this crescendo. And I think Jalen Harris read the handwriting on the wall, and he understands that with the incoming players they've got coming, these young freshmen. His playing time went from a year ago, 30 minutes a game, to 24 this year, and probably enjoyed his season even more, playing less minutes. But I'm sure he reads the handwriting on the wall. That 24 is not going to get closer to 30. It's probably going to get closer to 15 in the next season and maybe less than 10.
Yeah, and that's that's kind of delicately balancing if Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe come back.
Yep.
Because if they come
back, that's
an unknown. Then your minutes are definitely going to decrease. And again, neither Mason Jones or Isaiah Joe have announced their decision what they're going to do with their future at Arkansas, or if they look to have aspirations toward the NBA, which both of them do, but it's just a matter if they're going to do that or not next year. We're talking Arkansas basketball here on the Morning Rush. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in. So with Jalen leaving, Tommy, that opens up the question, and Jimmy gone graduate-wise as well, unless something crazy happens March 30th and the NCAA decides to give winter sports an extra year of eligibility. Who's going to be your point guard next year? Is it going to be Devontae Davis? Is it going to be K.K. Robinson? Is Mason, if he comes back, going to run the point again? Are they going to put Moses on that? I mean, Desi, are they going to play him some at the point? That's going to be an interesting part of this offense next year.
Yeah.
Is who's handling the rock?
Yeah, and you got to have, you know, every great Arkansas team's had that player, right? That, you know, and every great team does. You got to have someone to do that. So I'll be interesting to see, could a freshman come in? Could a K.K. Robinson come in and handle that in the SEC? I know you want Mason Jones back for a lot of reasons, but, you know, we saw how this team missed the defense of Isaiah Joe when he was out. You know, why was Corey Beck so good in his day? Because he locked down people defensively. So, I mean, it's not just about the offense. It's not just about the assist. It's not just about, you know, opening up opportunities, running the point. It's also about, can you go against their best player defensively and shut them down? So, looking for that kind of player, too.
Nolan would tell you, and he's mentioned this openly before, that Corey wasn't exactly the go-to prototypical point guard, but he did so many other great things on the basketball court that allowed him to play, and that's why this team was so successful. Got Anthony going in on our Facebook page that he thinks KK can be the point guard next year. And I've watched KK. I've watched Devontae. KK's a little smaller in frame. Devontae's a little thicker and a little taller, but as you mentioned, it's one thing to have success in the high school circuit, regardless if you're playing Arkansas high school basketball or you're playing in a prep school like KK was at Oak Hill. It's a whole nother thing when you enter not only non-conference play, but SEC play.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, is your home in Arkansas at least 10 years old and served by OG&E? They're offering a free weatherization program right now to increase your comfort and to lower your bills. A trained crew will come to your home. They'll do an energy audit. That doesn't cost you anything at all. In fact, all of this service I'm telling you about is absolutely free from OG&E. If your home qualifies, they'll put attic insulation in, LED light bulbs, weather stripping, power strips, smoke alarms, carbon monoxide detectors, and a whole lot more. And again, it's a free program. 1-800-272-9741. That's 1-800-272-9741 for OG&E's free home weatherization program.
Clay Henry's going to join us in about 10 or 12 minutes or so. He's going to be down there with Tommy at his river house.
He is here now.
And I've still yet to be invited to one of those things, even though Tommy, since like the moment I got here, said, oh, we're going to take you to the river house, Sonny. And still haven't been invited to that. So I'm thinking that's just a lie at this point in time, since it's about a year and a half here into my tenure at ESPN Arkansas.
Well, it's not a lie. Clay and I are going to be meeting about your time frame on when we think you're worthy of coming to the North Fork River. It's somewhere in the future, Clay says.
Okay.
It is in your future. But, you know, as I always say, what am I always famous for saying about these situations, Ty?
I'm at a loss for words. What are you famous for saying for?
Someone's got to run the board.
That's a good point. That's why Jenkins is
Someone
here.
Has to run the board.
Never get to go.
And Jenkins is in the captain's chair. He's in my seat today running the board for the first time ever. And I just didn't think it would be fair to SmackDown to leave him without your tutelage and your guidance today on his first maiden voyage running the board. Can you imagine the pressure he would feel under if we left him there all alone? The fear in his eye. You would hear it jumping through the radio this morning.
He ain't lying.
You mean like when you and neighbors left me alone when y'all were at Hardee's for the first time and I didn't run?
Correct. And you were scared to death. I almost had to drive back over to show you how to push a button.
I guess you learned from your mistakes. And
I try not to make the same mistake twice.
Well, when we go out and social distance on the boat or whatever, and you guys can fish, and I'll bring a cooler of White Claws and I'll just watch and take pictures. How's
if
that
you
sound?
If you bring a cooler of White Claws, I think Clay may throw you in the river.
I think Clay would enjoy.
He may use you for bait.
I think Clay would enjoy a White Claw, a red grapefruit White Claw.
Clay is shaking his head. No, he is not drinking a grapefruit White Claw.
He's very disappointed in my father. So my dad, again, I've told this story before. My dad and I used to grow up, and one of the things I like to do on Saturday mornings is eat grapefruit with my dad. And he did not like the grapefruit White Claw. What did Clay say? You're laughing.
Clay said he's going to drink a good Cabernet out there.
That's even better. Even better. See, It's not Wine Wednesday, though, so yeah. I don't know.
I'll bring the cheese and Clay can bring the wine.
I would die if I saw Clay drinking wine out on the boat. Oh, I think I might fall over in shock.
Clay's come up before, and not we haven't had wine in the boat, but Clay and I have enjoyed a bottle of wine and just sat and enjoyed the river before.
Okay. When was
me and him and last summer, me and him and Scott Tabor were sitting out on the patio just grilling some steaks, if I remember right. And what were we grilling? Pork butt. That's right.
Okay.
So you can put that headset on. It does work, Clay. I can turn your microphone.
Oh, God. Yeah, we had.
All right, let's chill on that. Jeez.
Bar made homemade apple cobbler.
Yeah.
Ice cream. I think we brought a salad, maybe.
Yeah, it was a great potluck.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd smoked a pork butt that day. That's right. So, yeah.
And your kids made some kind of pink lemonade concoction. It scared us to death. It was more scary than the wine.
That thing may cure coronavirus. Yeah. Maybe they need to whip up another batch.
They said we asked what was in it, and they said everything. It was. Remember the suicides?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You go to the fountain drink and you get a little bit of everything.
It was like a little bit of lemonade, a little bit of Coke, a little bit of grape juice. But it was nothing yeah. harmful. It was all right.
Did you ever do that as a kid,
Ty? Oh, yeah.
Was or was that done?
Dr. Pepper, Coke, and Sprite was my go-to. Yeah. So yeah. I loved making suicides as a kid. I haven't done that in quite some time. It's probably been 10 or so years. But, no, I absolutely did that, guys. Love doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So.
Those are anyway. Go to the gas station and do the. My dad always looked at me like he just shook his head when I would do that and stuff because that was so.
We're still doing that with you. With you guys.
Yeah, shaking our head.
Same thing. Yeah. Listen.
Wow.
If I had a nickel for every time someone, regardless of age, shook their head at me, I would be a rich man and not have to do this and not have to wake up every day at 4:20. I think that's part of my generation and my charm is the fact that I continuously don't learn from my mistakes and I continue to make them.
Right now, I think we'd say we get to wake up at 4:20. We're thankful to be able to do it.
Yep. Yeah.
So
no, I say that in the most tongue-in-cheek way possible. Yeah.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
He does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Clay, I'm glad you brought up the Gail Goodrich interview that you got a chance to do because I'll try and tie my generation with your generation as best I can. So on NBA 2K, there is these different teams, these different classic teams that you can play with, and the Los Angeles Lakers with Elgin Baylor, Gail Goodrich, Jerry West, and others, that's one of those teams. And I kind of did some research on Gail, and that's kind of how I got started looking him up. And I mean, he was one of the sharp shooters not only in college basketball but in NBA history. You think about what he was able to do with Jerry West and company while he was on the Los Angeles Lakers. And so what'd you learn about him, man?
Well, the most interesting thing, I asked him about how John Wooden recruited him, and he went back to the ninth grade when he was 5'3", and his dad gave him a leather basketball, and he would go up. They would have pickup games at the local high school, and they had four teams. They had a varsity, a JV, a B team, and a C team. And so you'd go up and you'd practice with the team that you probably were going to be on. It's amazing how he said rank would fall. You know, like the players know who's supposed to be where. So he's supposed to be playing on the C team. He's just a tiny little guy, but he came up with this leather basketball. Nobody had leather basketballs in. They're all rubber. And the varsity guys is like, well, we want to play with the leather basketball. He goes, well, then I get to play with you.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't pick him, then he'd go down to the other gym and play with the C guys, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They picked him every time. And he was just a magician with the ball and never made a mistake. And that's how he made the high school team as a ninth grader. The coach saw him, and he would never have picked a guy that little if he hadn't seen him play against the varsity guys.
It's a good story.
Yeah. And I said, that leather basketball is tied to all of it. And he goes, yeah. And of course, he said that toughened him up, made him better. He wouldn't have gotten as good. It's an incredible breakthrough that his dad just gave him that leather basketball, which no kid as a ninth grader had a leather basketball in like 1960.
Yeah. You know, tying it back to I mean, really all sports, but when we talk about this in golf, when you play with better golfers, you become a better golfer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm sure basketball is the same thing. If he'd have played on that C team, he wouldn't have been nearly as good a player because he wouldn't have been playing around. He wouldn't have been defended by better players. He wouldn't have been forced to improve.
Yeah, so as a ninth grader, he did not play on the varsity as a ninth grade, played JV, but he traveled with the varsity. Mm-hmm. And that was apparently a great team. They end up winning the city championship, which you didn't really need to play in the state championship in L.A. If you were a city champion, you were better than anybody else in the country. But he said when he was a junior in high school, USC, where his dad was captain in the 50s on the basketball team, had not recruited him, and he was playing in the semifinals city championship, and his parents were about the fifth row, and they heard somebody talking behind them, and it was Jerry Norman and John Wooden, the two coaches at UCLA. And he says, I think we're going to recruit that young man. And he says, we need to meet the parents. And the mother turned around and says, I'm the mama of that one right there. The left-hander you're talking about. Gale was left-handed. And that's where it all started. And UCLA, they finally offered him a scholarship the night of the city championship his senior year, which was in February. And I didn't know it, but his high school, they graduated at midterm. That's how they did it. They graduated in the winter. And John Wooden walked out on the court and said, I think we're going to offer you a scholarship. When can you enroll? And he says, I graduate tomorrow night. I can enroll Monday morning. And they shook hands. There was no letter of agreement, no nothing else. And apparently the USC coaches were just – they didn't realize that he was about to graduate early. They thought they had the spring to recruit him.
They missed out. So.
Yeah.
Missed out on the opportunity. So real quick, Clay, before as we tie up this story, his nickname was Stumpy and the Stump. Did you get into the origin of that? Why that nickname was his nickname?
No, he was 5'11" when he graduated from high school. So he was always really short for his age. He was a real late bloomer. He played as a ninth grader at like 5'4". So
wow.
I'm sure that was, but he was a. Would take it inside. I mean, he would finish at the rim no matter who was playing against him, bigger or whatever. But the best stories were about, he played at UCLA with Walt Hazard is his other guard. And apparently Wooden was just unmerciful in how he beat up Goodrich, like lambasted him with a bad pass or this or that. And Hazard, he'd go over and hug and coddle and then say, hey, you might not try that bounce pass again, and just kind of pat him on the shoulder and walk away. And Goodrich says, why do you treat him like that and me like that? And he says, because you can take it. He says, you've been coached by your dad, a little bit tougher. He says, everybody you coach different, which, that was the first time he'd ever heard that. And it's just coaches. You have to know every single player is different.
Yeah, Tommy yells at me and coddles Jenkins. That's I understand that.
Yeah, because you can take it. How impressed are you that Ty Richardson knew who you were talking about?
Well, I'm impressed. I'm not surprised. And just listen. So he's a basketball junkie.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he would know, I'm sure he can, if I say who is the big O, he's going to say who.
Oscar Robertson.
Well.
Yeah.
Oliver Miller.
Yeah, but most people his age, you say the big O, they're not going to say Oscar Robertson and know how many triple doubles that he had, at the highlight of his career. He was turning out triple doubles before anybody even knew they were triple doubles.
Averaged one and one.
But it's So anyway, I'm impressed, but not surprised.
Yeah.
Thank you, Clint.
Now we just turn out. Now Ty just turns out triple doubles at the Wendy's drive-thru.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So you guys,
with Clint, lots of cheese.
Lots of cheese, man. So y'all brought up the Texas game a little bit, and we'll touch on that one next. The 1990 game. Here is a highlight from that clip.
Minutes of play, and it's a 6-point game by six.
I can only imagine what that atmosphere.
That was Tom Pinders, right? Tom Pinders was the Texas coach.
Sweet Tom.
So the thing that was incredible about that, of course, Arkansas dominated them during the year as well. And the lead up to that tournament game was that will they try to run with Arkansas again? And Arkansas players is that they don't have enough guts to do that. And yeah, they tried, and I mean, they couldn't run. I mean,
no.
That was just pure death to try to run with that Arkansas team.
Yeah, I mean, and that Arkansas team, which one was it, 92 they lost to Kansas in the Elite Eight? I think it was 2 years later they lost to Kansas. And I remember, that's one of the games that, is it 91? Oh, that one stood out to me more than anything because you expected so much following the trip to Denver in the Final Four. And it was a more mature team with the second round of triplets with Todd Daly, Mayberry, Oliver Miller. And, you know, that was just a really good about three-year stretch there.
Yeah, that was a strange season. And you had the dorm incident that had happened. And you had – and then Oliver, who had gained some weight, I think he was ordering three pizzas a night.
He was having some triple-doubles.
Yeah, he had a cash settlement.
Man up
during
to my
that,
own heart. You
know, he's wrongly accused.
Right.
And he broke his foot. And there was no talk about it, but you could see him limping. We all knew something was wrong. We weren't sure if it was a foot, some kind of a calf muscle or Achilles. But he just wasn't the same. And he was really laboring to play, and you knew that. But just on the surface, I think Butch Morris was on that team. If you just looked at the talent, that might have been as talented a team as Nolan had. And it's hard to say anybody was more talented than the 94-95 bunch, but that was close. And I think he felt like that was a national championship team, that they didn't get everything out of it.
Yep.
Clay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he has been publicly outspoken that was his best team. Now, don't hold me to that 100%, but I believe he has come out and said that before. Most talented. So, which, like you're saying, is very interesting considering where they ended up. So I don't know. Yeah, you're going to have to explain it.
But Oliver wasn't the same.
I mean, because of the foot.
With the foot injury, he just could not. You say, well, he lost his quickness. Well, you don't think of Oliver being nimble, but he was.
Yeah, he.
And he couldn't do some things. And he tried things that were like, you just see, well, he can finish that. You know, why is he not dunking that one? You know, from point blank range or whatever. Well, he couldn't get off that one foot.
Yeah.
So if it came up that was the foot he had to jump off of, then he was toiling, and he wasn't his normal self. And he would tell you that now if you visited with him.
And, you know, I remember, you know, I guess probably the best memories of Oliver Miller other than the Final Four is when he'd take on Shaq, and people thought Shaq would eat him up, but he shut Shaq down and played against Shaquille O'Neal very well.
He could lean against him, and he could hold him in a spot because of his strength, you know, in girth. And he still looked small compared to Shaq. I mean, Shaq was just so massive. I will always remember this, the game in Barnhill where they win by one or whatever, and Shaq was down low at the very end and
blocked
was
by
trying
Miller
to get to the basket. Yeah, well, Todd Day hit him from behind. They both fouled him. Mm-hmm. There wasn't any question. And it's the age-old deal. Will the official blow his whistle in the last second?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking about in the last second. And a lot of times they will not. You know, 1.1 second, you don't get that foul. Mm-hmm. And of course, Shaq would – he would have bricked those free throws anyway, so it wouldn't matter.
Clay, you were giving me credit about my old school basketball knowledge earlier, but I will have to say this. I don't know what dorm room incident story you're talking about. Can you fill me and others who don't know about what you're referring to?
The dorm incident. Yeah, there was a lady in the dorm.
Yeah.
And, you know, I believe Todd Day had to miss a semester over all of that.
Yeah, there's an accusation of sexual assault, and then there was an investigation.
So I found in my dad's memoirs, or however you want to call it, stuff that was in his desk, a 400-page, it's the police investigation with all the depositions. I got it all. I can bring that. I could go to the house and bring that down here, and I could read to you in the number of football players that were deposed is incredible. Mm-hmm. People that you'll read.
That was the near the end of athletic dorms. I'm not saying that was the reason athletic dorms were taken out, but after that, athletic dorms were taken away.
The reason why athletic dorms were removed were because places like Oklahoma were building palaces, and it's like that's not where a normal student is going to reside. And the NCAA, it was embarrassing, the arms race, and it's like, okay, let's just put athletes in the same dorms that the regular students, and we'll end that because it's the have-nots that decided that, because they couldn't afford to build those dorms for athletes. So the have-nots, who control the vast number of the seats in the elections, they're not elections. They're meetings.
Committee votes.
Yeah. Committee votes.
So you mentioned the combination. When I was in school, the majority of the athletes lived in the quad, which was a combination of a lot of different athletes and a couple different just normal Joe Blow regular college students. But that's where the majority of them stayed. I know that they've redone Founders, which is the new hall at the University of Arkansas, and they've done what used to be Pomfret. I don't know what they're calling it now, but it's a new dormitory down there. But the campus is growing, and I would assume, now I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that they still have the majority of Arkansas basketball, football, baseball living in the Northwest Arkansas quad.
I think that's correct, yep. So I lived in Hotz Hall.
Okay.
I was there my one year there.
That's a smart dorm, Clay. Congratulations.
It was always a smart dorm.
That's the honors dorm. It's gotten a little renovation since you probably lived in it. But I lived in old Strokem Yoakum, which was I don't think it's been renovated since it's been established at the University of Arkansas. But I loved it, even though I probably got a number of different diseases from that dorm. All right, let's move on. Michigan.
Let me tell you about Crabtree RV. Okay. Let me segue with this. Crabtree RV in Alma, exit 13 off of I-40. 70 years in business, and they'd love to see you this weekend. They can do all the social distancing and take care of you and all that stuff and make sure your shopping experience is safe. In fact, I'd like to shop outdoors because it's going to be a great weather day, but they have the 26,000 square foot indoor showroom, so there's plenty of room for everybody to come in and look around. There's no better way to get your family out and do something. I'm telling you, driving up here last night, there was RV after RV, travel trailer. I mean, everybody's going somewhere to camp right now. So take your family to a great state park, national park. There's lots of opportunities around our state. You can get near a waterway like we are on the North Fork or the White River and really enjoy it. It's all at Crabtree RV in Alma. 70 years in business. Exit 13 off of I-40. Crabtree RV, it's where your family's dreams come true.
1994, you beat Michigan. It was not the Fab Five because Chris Webber had left to that point, but you still had Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, Ray Jackson, Jimmy Keane. Still had a really good squad under Steve Fisher. Here is the 1994 highlight of that win.
Back up again. Williamson with position. There he is. Corliss Williamson.
So strong, Jim, with that.
They come right out of the timeout and get it inside to Robin.
Arizona.
There's the final entry into the Final Four, the Arkansas Razorbacks.
So, guys, of the teams in the 90s that were considered cool by the vast majority of young people, it was UNLV and Larry Johnson, Greg Anthony, and Stacey Augmon and those boys. It was Michigan, Fab Five, Chris Webber and company. And then Arkansas was kind of in that mix. So you had them play. Obviously, you beat Michigan in 94. You lost to UNLV in that 1v2 matchup. But that was a game, Tommy, where Juwan Howard went off. He had 30-something points, and you just wonder if Chris Webber's on that team. Does Arkansas beat him?
Yeah, and you know, that was such an interesting time, like you said, with those teams. I'd also throw Duke into that list because Christian Laettner.
But people hated Duke.
But there was a lot of people that liked Duke because of that era, too. So a lot of people became that was their adopted second team or a lot of people's second team because Duke was kind of the front runner of college basketball as well during that time. So that was another program that was either fun to hate or a lot of people liked them just because they were front runners.
Clay, what was that game like?
Arkansas would have beat that Michigan team with
Webber. You think so?
They might have beat him worse.
Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Because Webber was like he was star-crossed. I mean, it wasn't going to happen for him. I mean, it all the things that went wrong. No, I mean, I just think if you add Webber, Nolan would have found one more player.
Yeah.
Off the bench or whatever. Alex Dillard would have scored enough. That team did whatever it took. And the double duo out front of Corey Beck and Clint McDaniel controlled games, and Corliss Williamson would have fouled out Chris Webber. They would have tried to put that. Corliss Williamson was the best player in college basketball at that time, period. And his ability, he was so fundamentally sound. You know, everybody talked about, you know, did Arkansas play ghetto ball or whatever. Corliss Williamson was the perfect power forward. Perfect. He played with his left hand, played with his right hand. He put you on either shoulder and finished with the other hand. And it was the most incredible thing to watch him during a game. Always in control. Always knew where the double team was. And there went two Eagles. Sorry.
He's easily distracted.
Hey, it's hard to soar like an eagle when you work with turkeys.
That's right.
Amen. So, and what's crazy, you mentioned Corliss's just ability on the basketball court, Clay. He did this all at 6'7". Now, I know he was just built as strong as an ox, but you got to think about some of the taller guys he played. For example, the national championship. Cherokee Parks, I know that he's not like a perennial all-college basketball player, but he still had a couple inches on him. You think about some of the other guys he had to go through in that national championship run and just games throughout the NCAA tournament. He is consistently playing guys that are taller than them, and yet he just worked them. He worked them. He put them in the basket every single game.
And he outran them. I mean, he outran them and finished them in breaks. I mean, there would be a long rebound, not to him. He's standing flat-footed under the basket, and there goes Corey, there goes Clint, and all at once you look, and Corliss has run past everybody, and he's the finisher, and it's finishing with a two-hand slam. I mean, there's so many highlights that you can see that, and it was just and the magic of that team. And Chris Webber would have tried to play 39 minutes, and he would have died in the last 8 minutes. He just would have.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they did to teams. That's what they did to Arizona. Arizona played their guards for 37, 38 minutes every game. The last 10 minutes, they could not play. And nobody wants to rest a guy like Chris Webber for 8 minutes in the first half, which is what you have to do.
And that was a time in basketball, and Nolan's talked about this, that in the regular season, he didn't have the 16, 12, 8, 4 timeouts like you got built into today's
exactly.
game. So they would run teams into the floor. Then you'd get to the postseason, and about that time in those early to mid-90s, they instituted the media timeouts in NCAA tournament games. And, you know, teams would get a chance to get a breather against Arkansas. In the regular season, Arkansas just run you in the floor because they didn't have the stoppages back then in the regular season, particularly like they do now, where every 4 minutes of game time, they're stopping the game.
I can't even imagine the conditioning that Nolan used to probably make his guys go through. I would die one of those practices. There's no
just go over there and drive up Cleveland Hill. That's all you need to do.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.